Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today, as you can see, we're going to be talking about cashless societies. Now, for those of you who watch all the shows, you'll know that I have a routine comment that I make about, you know, chipped cards. So you may or may not have heard the phrase cashless society. A lot of you will know exactly what I'm talking about. But the cashless society thing is actually a massive deal. What's really crazy about it is that there are passages in the Bible and Revelations that talk about sort of a one-world currency and the dangers of that. And you'll read that in a world where you have, you know, hundreds of currencies, and you'll just go, wow, we don't even know what this guy was talking about. This is nuts. And then as you start to see the centralization of currency, you'll start to understand the power, because it's a multi-tiered system, the cashless society thing, and then the one-world currency is the last coup de grace step. They're two different things. Now, one of Alex Jones' best movies he ever made in his entire life was called Endgame. And it was sort of ironically positioned one movie before the last movie he made, which I believe was The Obama Deception. And he just simply stopped making movies. His movies were the most amazingly, thoroughly researched things on planet Earth. And even though he does have that big barreling voice, which sort of makes one cringe for the validity of the data, he's usually right. He usually does his thing. But Endgame movie talks about the last step, which I want to talk about first, so that when you learn about this other part, the purpose of listening to this episode will make sense. Again, we're not trying to be a news at 11, build up a bunch of suspense kind of show, right? But he talked about the Amero, the Euro, and I can't remember what they called the Asian currency. I don't think it was like Asia, but it was something, some Asian currency as well. And they were going to bring the whole world down to three currencies. And the Amero exists. We've seen it forged in coin, supposedly over, well, I should just say, several tens of billions of dollars of this currency was shipped to China because they own a lot of our bonds, and now they're sitting there going, look, your currency isn't worth anything, so how you going to make good on your debt? And supposedly we took a lot of gold, forged it into these Amero coins and shipped it off, and supposedly a senator leaked one in front of a camera. That's only evidence that we know, but we know the Euro exists, and it's a nightmare. So you don't really need to theorize about any other currencies. When you centralize currency, but you keep nation states completely separated in their culture, which we need to because we have different genetic pools, that I think it behooves us to preserve them so that we have, you know, Mexican food, Asian food, Mexican cultures, Asian cultures, all these different cultures in the world. We want to be celebrating mankind. We know we shouldn't rush to be gray. You know, we shouldn't rush to be one race. We shouldn't rush to be one thing. And some people could counteract that, but I think that's happening naturally and beautifully, and those who are early adopters have more tolerance for race. They do it. They intermarry with different races, and they create kids, and it's just what's going on right now matches the intellectual development of what's happening in the physical world. So I think this is the only way to do it. Besides, you know, creating some Gestapo horrible world where it's like, you must mate with this person because it will mix blood perfectly, right? But the Euro's a disaster. Complete and utter disaster. Which is why Brexit happened. That's why the United States has its own currency. That's why no one's really rushing into the EU unless they can't pay their bills. That's why people want in right now. So the big countries went in together to say, let's augment our economy. We'll make it all happen. And then, of course, the EU is about welfare and just redistribution of wealth. And so all these poor countries come in who have overspent. They've bent over forward for the IMF loan shields, just basically mismanaged their countries, elected the wrong people. They're billions, if not trillions of dollars in debt, and they join the EU just to get the bailout. How fun would that be that you could go down your street? Well, hell, you could go to your town, and the richest guy or the richest girl in town, they all kind of cabal together to pool their wealth because they're all successful, and then the rest of the town just takes them down. But the pool in the middle worked really, really hard. They're not illegal people. They're not criminalistic. They just worked really, really hard. They didn't have any silver spoons in their mouth. Well, that's what's happened to Germany, Spain, and France, at a minimum. But this is about a cashless society. You know, I seldom do it where I say, let's start saying this, and I start giving you a mantra for us to say. If it's, you know, it's like, you know, changing one person one at a time. Something like spreading the truth one person at a time. Those are harmless, right? But this particular episode should start to make you say certain things, I think, because we need to heighten the awareness of what's going on. I feel like I'm in a world of craziness. Absolute craziness. And it has to do with this separation of my age bracket, which I'm old enough to have experienced a certain amount of stuff, and I've got the freedom, financial freedom, to think about these sorts of things, obviously to make this show and edit it and put it online. And the younger generations that need to pay attention to what's really going on are so stressed out about their education, about their jobs, that they are not paying attention because they barely can. Between the stressful moments in their lives, they're looking for any form of instant entertainment they possibly can, which is why, you know, when I was a kid, you didn't trick-or-treat past the age of perhaps 12. I remember the very first time I trick-or-treated with some friends at around 13, the person answers the door and goes, I'm not giving you any candy. These kids can have some candy, but you can't. You're too big. I was a little tall for my age at the time, but it would seem now that, you know, things like Pokemon Go, a game that should be really reserved for children, maybe 13 and down. Just think about it. You're chasing augmented reality things on your telephone. I suppose it doesn't hurt anything necessarily, but it just seems like when I grew up, that would be considered an absolutely childish thing. But the reason why I think that stuff succeeds right now is that the stress is so high to be young, to fear your future. You only have milliseconds to look up and pay attention to anything. And when these kids look up, they want the quickest possible solution because it is the solution. It fits within the envelope of what they have time to spare out of their processor. You know, they're like, Dad, Mom, you're up my ass about this. Even if you're not up my ass, I'm responsible for myself and my own mind. So I've tried to get this education and this job. And so I'm going to go, boom, why does everything suck? And could you imagine trying to fit what you know as a truther into a couple seconds? What are you going to say? Bankers. It's about the only word you can say that just tells them in one word what's wrong with the world. Money. If you say money, it's a little non-specific. Bankers is an actual noun of a person, you know, or a place, you know. But the cashless society problem is being facilitated by the fact that, you know, either you're sort of a baby boomer and you can't go to bed at night thinking the world is different than what you were raised for it to be, because, you know, the finish line for being considered perpetually smart for a baby boomer is way the hell back there. It doesn't take much. It's about a 0.5K run. You know, if you graduated in the 60s, high school, you know, and you got to your four-year college or whatever, the amount of certification in a baby boomer's brain for being smart, in my experience, has been, you know, they're absolutely fucking oracles in their own mind. It doesn't matter if science innovates every 10 years and reinvents things or invents new things. They know it all. It's just really weird. And I'm talking about people that I'm not related to, friends of mine that will just get on you. And obviously, I have friends that are exceptions to those rules, by all means. But what's really weird is that I got baby boomers above me and Gen Yers below me, and I'm sort of in this weird pseudo-X. The Gen Yers tend to think that they don't know anything constantly. And so they need things that seem to make fundamental sense. because the mechanics of connecting concepts together is very overwhelming. So when it comes to like, how do we run the world? How do we run the United States government? You have a choice. You've got, you know, Hillary Clinton, which looks absolutely establishment, is establishment. You got Donald Trump, who's a scary business alpha male man. Scary. And then you have, hey, this grapple guy looks pretty good in the center, you know, back when he was running. And so, hey, why don't you pick the old man that looks like a Pokemon Go ball? He just looks soft and fuzzy and warm, right? So it's this mechanism that I believe is facilitating horrible change. And let me just say right off the bat that, you know, in an ideal society, when we don't have massive corruption from the banking cartels down, destroying everyone's life everywhere constantly, right? I mean, believe me, I got friends of mine that are worth a ton of money. And what's funny is when you ask them to invest in something, or you just listen to them talk about investments, the amount of absolute fear they have for getting rid of a thousandth of their stockpile to invest in something that could really do well. And again, this is not talking about my own stuff. It's because they fear the fact that they were so lucky to amass this wealth. The system really doesn't work. They got some insider information, perhaps, fuck if I know, and they got ahead somehow, you know. But in an ideal world, we would be able to have one currency for whatever country we're talking about. Maybe a one world currency in a perfect world where, again, you know, it's not about bankers ruling the world. There's no rollerball executive layer to the reality that we're in. But unfortunately, because they exist, because they are extremely easy to see, because we watch them assassinate countries with financial loan systems, we cannot jump into the steps that are before us right now. That may just happen. I don't know. But let me warn you about one thing that I hear a lot about. People will say, and I've said this before, but people will give into what they believe is a foregone conclusion, something that cannot be changed. They'll say, well, you know, so-and-so will get elected, or, well, this is going to happen. Well, you know what? There's nothing we can do. If you walk around with those little sayings, then absolutely you're right. You're going to, if nothing else, you're going to dial your own consciousness when you go to sleep and you wake up and you've dreamscaped over the nighttime. You will wake up in that other world. So it's up to you what you want to draw yourself to. I don't think you're bound to this grid of existence. I think when you go to sleep, you actually do have a chance to swim underneath the pool over to the other pool. And when you pop out, it looks exactly the same. But it's more positive, or it's more negative, depending on how you dreamscape when you went to sleep. Go see my episode on dreamscaping if you have any questions. So let's dig into cashless society, now that I've sort of set it up just a tad. What does it mean? It means that there's no physical cash in the world. And what's that mean? What's the difference between having physical money in your hand and having a credit card that addresses the money and the bank? Let me ask you, have you ever been really hungry before? I mean, you woke up and for whatever reason, your stomach growled and it was saying to you, you will not be allowed to accomplish any tasks today until you feed this belly. Now, the truth of the matter is you can go a couple days like that, pop aspirin, and then you won't feel it anymore. It's really weird. You can lose all the weight you want. Not very good for your body. Well, now I want you to think about that moment when you're really hungry. Because hunger is something that is an imperative to your existence. If I gave you an analogy of something that you really wanted or something you really needed, which was a physical object outside your body, you could convince yourself you don't need it. But food and water, something you got to have, right? Now, I give you two methods of paying for this thing, and then we're going to run a scenario. You got $5 in your pocket. However you have it, $5 bill, five ones, or some change in a little cup you keep all your change in over the last couple of years. And then you got a credit card. And you can only take one with you. But let's say you take the credit card because, man, it's a lot lighter, much easier. What I didn't promise you, because this little deal with the devil, you're playing Faust in this scenario, you walk out the front door, and instantaneously I inform you that I didn't guarantee you how the world was going to be when you walked out that door. I say it's December 2016. And regardless of who became the president of the United States, the bankers of the world have planned to crash the United States stock market. George Soros put a gigantic bet on the stock market, which he already has as of this recording, that the stock market will crash. Bloomberg's been screaming on their front page for 3 years that it's going to crash. So is the Wall Street Journal, timing it explicitly in articles after a particular person gets elected president illegally. And I tell you that the banks are closed today. As a matter of fact, they've had such a run on cash through electronic means, meaning the credit card you got in your hand, that thing doesn't work today. And you're hungry. And you're not going to be able to go back and get the cash, because this is the scenario we're in. So now you're going to be hungry all day. But now let's reverse the scenario. You took the cash, the $5 bill. You go outside, and I tell the exact same story. Banks aren't working right now. Now, there'd be a little bit of hysteria, because a lot of businesses would be relying on cash at that point, because their credit card machines wouldn't work. Or perhaps they'll take the money, but they won't actually register it in their banks. But who knows? You've got real cash. There's going to be a third scenario to this, too. Now, so far, no one has told you or the world that cash has no value. And so you're able to find a taco truck, something that's open, and someone that's willing to take the risk that that money still is going to have value once this correction peters out, which would probably be the case. So they take your $5 and they give you food. Maybe they even give you a special, because you're one of the few people with any money at all. They've got all this food they bought the previous night before the crash, and they got to get rid of it, otherwise it's going to go bad. So instead of getting 5 tacos, you can get 15, just because they got to get rid of this stuff. Now, third scenario. Doesn't matter which one you take, you come out the door and I tell you that story, and I also tell you one little caveat, and I say, the banks are closed, and your money's worth nothing. That printed cash is worth nothing. If you have a bunch of quarters in your pocket, that has a little bit of value, but they're not worth 25 cents anymore. And then I say to you, okay, unlike the previous two scenarios where you had to stay in the scenario until you dealt with your hunger, I'm going to let you go back in your house, and you can get anything in that house that has value that you think you can use to eat off of. Now, right off the bat, you know that you could grab possessions, but then how can you evaluate a possession against food? Maybe the person in front of you doesn't recognize the little porcelain thing you got from Paris is, costing you $500, and all you want to do is get $25 worth of food. They don't know that it's worth a lot of money. What do you grab then? Well, one of the things you could grab would be jewelry, right? But the problem is jewelry might be fake. Don't know. Maybe the guy knows how to bite it. Maybe he knows how to drop it on the ground, some piece of silver, and he hears that ring, that special ring that only silver makes. And he's willing to swap it for some food. But let's just say you were smart and you bought a few gold coins, or you bought some gold little ingots or silver little ingots, silver coins, whatever. You've got some coins that actually are made of precious metals and they're visibly valuable. But here's the other thing I tell you. Because the stock market crashed and because cash isn't worth anything, gold is at $3,000 an ounce and climbing by the hour. $10 by the hour. And the whole world knows it. The one piece of news everyone can get is that gold is now really valuable. Silver is really valuable. Instead of $20 for a little ounce of silver, hell, it's worth $200 now. Ounce of gold's $33,000. Or maybe 12 grand. Who knows? And now if you can prove that you have gold or silver, you can hand it off, exchange stuff between you, right? Now, what if there's no credit cards? And what if there's no cash? And what if we go back to the Depression days where Theodore Roosevelt put out a call on all precious metals? You couldn't have any. You have to ship it to the government. They're going to give you... Now, let's run that down the scenario. It's the day of the crash. The president starts to magically seize all of your precious metals. And so you have to hand in, let's say, $1,000 worth of silver. Now, the moment before you hand it in, the 60 seconds before you handed it in, because this whole thing's crashing, you're watching the commodities market, and you're watching your silver go up in value every second. Maybe just a little bit. But you know, by the end of the day, it would have probably doubled, tripled, quadrupled. And now the government is taking that away from you. And they're going to give you cash. They're basically going to say, the second that you give us the silver, whatever's on the monitor for the value of silver is what you're going to get in your credit system in your computer. You're not going to get physical cash. But they give you a receipt. They give you an app for your phone so you can check your balance. And now, all of a sudden, your money stops going up in value. It just locks. Whatever it was, it locks. And now you keep watching the monitor for the value of the silver you just gave away. And the fucking bank who has your silver, who gave you fixed fiat currency digits, their value keeps going up. They're seizing everything with real value and giving you a piece of shit excuse for a currency. Now, if you're a layman, you might just need that to understand the dangers of a cashless society, of having absolutely no precious metal involved with the value of money. Let's take it to the next level. You turned in $1,000 worth of silver. You got 1,000 credits in your bank. Call them dollars, call them euros, call them whatever. You learn that in the next coming weeks, because the government is sort of bankrupt, because the banks that are private for profit organizations took all the precious metal, not the United States government, because the Federal Reserve Bank is nothing but a private for profit bank masquerading as a federal organization. Should be an international felony right there. They start to do something that they've got a fancy name for called quantitative easing. That's a big fancy word, so you never understand what the hell that means. What does that mean? That means printing money. Now, you may not know anything about economics, and so you're like, all right, well, I know we print money all the time. I mean, if we don't print money, we don't have any. Except in this scenario, you're saying, well, what the hell? There is no more cash. There are no more credit cards. I just got this, like, credit stick, and it identifies me. Maybe it's my thumbprint on my little iPhone or my Android. But that day you got your 1,000 credits, you went down to the store and you bought a gallon of milk. It's about $3.29. It's pretty good. And then a month or two goes by in this economic collapse scenario, and they start printing money. And they call it quantitative easing, so it sounds all complicated. You go back down to buy that milk, and now it's $3.75. And you ask the store owner, you're like, is there a shortage on milk? No, huh? No. But the store owner knows why it went up in price. And they simply tell you, your money doesn't have the same value today as it did when you bought the last gallon of milk. And you say, what? And they say, yeah, didn't you hear? They're printing a bunch of money into the credit system. They're increasing the amount of digits available to American citizens just by adding more digits to the overall digits inside the banks. And even though currency isn't backed by gold anymore, because the banks have so much gold and so much silver, they're able to borrow against their own gold and silver as an asset at 100x what it's worth. The United States government is right there along with them, validating all these transactions to increase the amount of money in the world for your country. And so now it takes a shit ton more money to buy something. But the thing is you had to cash out your silver at 1,000. You look up at the commodities exchange for when you actually sold the silver, and now it's at $2,500 an ounce. So the bank that got your silver, or the government that got your silver, they just made a $1,500 profit in the time from when you got your 1,000 credits to now. But your buying power just went down. You now have to use more money to buy basic essentials of life. And that's the first thing that'll happen when a cashless society happens, when cash is no longer printed, when coins are no longer forged. And eventually, credit cards in America are totally deprecated because they have been made awful. How many of you are digging the chips in America in our credit cards? From what I understand, Europe has done this a long time ago. But then again, I'd have to have one of my European listeners confirm that to me. But I'll tell you what happened in the United States of America. We have these credit cards with little strips on the back, right? The magnetic strip identifying the account numbers and everything that is you. My entire life since the mid to late 70s, when these things were debuted to Americans as ATM cards, you swipe them in a credit card machine and instantaneously, unless there's just a congestion with that particular vendor's machine, instantaneously it figures out who I am, bills me, and it's over. Maybe I got to sign a receipt, tops. With an ATM, you just got to dial in whatever your digits are, and the transaction's over. Now, they put these chips in the card, and they told you that it was more secure this way. Well, now think about the security argument. It's ridiculous. They were foolish back in the day, and the only number that you had to steal was the number off the card. Then they added expiration dates, month and year. But people still were pretty damn clever in looking over at your card and having memories, because a lot of the numbers that precede the number that is your unique digit on your credit card are the same. You ever typed in just part of your number in a website and automatically knows if it's a Visa or a MasterCard? It's because those first few digits are always the same within a certain index, right? But then they put a little three-digit thing on the back of the card. And then it became pretty damn secure. You can't see both sides of a card very easily. And hell, those little numbers are so tiny that you have to look at them real close. And the older your card is, the ink comes out of the actual divots in the card. And you have to kind of flash it in light to see it at point blank range, right? Regardless of your eyesight. So cards up before this chip bullshit were completely secure. If anybody had a credit card fraud or some sort of online hacking on their account, it's because they put their credit card into an agency that stole all the information out of a database. But you rasterized it off your card into a database and they stole it. Nothing will ever change that. And the chip doesn't address at all online transactions. And that's where you get ID hacked. That's where your credit cards get hacked. So now they put this chip in, and we go up to buy something, and we got to stick it in the bottom of the machine, at least on half of them so far. And the transaction that was instantaneous has now turned into potentially a 60-second transaction, depending on if you put it in too soon, it blows the transaction. I know my 7-Eleven, if you put it in too soon, they have to actually void the entire transaction, even though it's telling you to put the card in, and they have to rescan everything. It's atrocious. Software is not ready. Now, luckily, my Walgreens is almost instantaneous. But why are they doing this? It sure as hell isn't for security. I just proved it to you. With those three little digits on the back of your card, it's completely secure. It is. If you get a credit card from Chase now, there are no digits on the top of the card. Everything's printed in really low relief on the back of the card, and you literally have to be a damn near point-blank range to see it. Why everyone isn't doing that, I don't know. When you buy something online, you don't have a chip reader at your house. So there's no point in the whole chip. There's no security. And that's where you get hacked, right? Just to repeat that once. But where's the phenomenon of paying for things going? It's going into your cell phone, right? Well, now this is where we get to the Gen Yers who are too busy and too terrified with life to pay attention to life. And we cannot blame them. When we were their age, if you're Gen X or above, you weren't burdened with running the world between the ages of 15 and 25. You weren't. You were supposed to be focusing on yourself, and there were more opportunities back in those days. The amount of technology you needed to learn to get a job was nothing in the 80s, right? And from 1985 to 95, the amount of receptionists I knew that I had to help in my companies install just basic software was almost 100%. And they still knew how to do their job once the software was installed and earn a paycheck and go home. But today they're using the Gen Yers to engineer the world. The second that they can vote, they push them into voting machines and then give them Santa Claus characters with Robin Hood promises. And it's working. They're fueling the entire world off emotions instead of logic. Which is really ironic, because when you ask a Gen Yer about their favorite movie, it's all pragmatic. They don't like a movie because of its emotional arc half the time. You know, when I was very close to the Tron Legacy project, I went to Disneyland that had this huge installation called Electronica, which was just awesome. A bunch of kids getting together, celebrating the Tron franchise. They dress up in suits, you know, lit outfits and stuff. It was just great. Probably 3,500 kids any one second of the day, jumping up and down to these DJs and all these dancers and stuff. And so I pulled aside a kid, because I'm a huge fan of the Tron franchise myself. And I said, "Did you like Tron Legacy?" And they go, "Oh, yeah, I totally loved it. It's great." And I said, "What was it about? Tell me the story. Anything about the story." Nothing. They liked the sound, the soundtrack, and they loved the special effects and the design of the light cycles and all that stuff and the feel of the movie. And there's nothing wrong with that, but look at how pragmatic they were. They had broke down an emotional experience into a mathematical experience. I like the music. And you could rationalize that that's an emotional payoff. But back in the day, you loved movies because of the way they made you cry. You know, all the movies from Star Wars to the Rocky trilogies to the Indiana Jones trilogies, E.T., all this stuff. The original Tron, Blade Runner, all these movies. It's because it moves you. But when it comes to politics, all of a sudden, the left brain, analytical, pragmatic Gen Yer, they lean towards emotion. Again, Trump is scary. Well, unless your father's worth $10 billion and built it up for $1 million, yeah, you've never stood in the room with a true man whose own life. And so you go for soft fuzzy. But this is about cashless society. But there's a fabric of that truth in the reason why, if they ever push to get rid of cash of any kind, printed money, coins, think about Apple computer just getting rid of the headphone jack out of a cell phone. When the headset costs $160, even though you get a free pair with your phone, you're going to, you know, the amount of people that are going to drop one of those little earbuds and have to go buy a $159 replacement, it's going to be off the charts. That company couldn't destroy itself faster. But it's because new technology, for some folks, provides a little bump in excitement in a world that is otherwise terrifying. I got a new phone. Life sucks. I got a new headset. Life sucks. Well, I got this thing when I'm all by myself and I don't have a future. I caught a Pokemon ball. You starting to see the formula now? Money is sovereignty. Money is control. If you hit a bunch of currency in your mattress for a bad day, let's just say, or whatever you're doing, coins, whatever, something of inherent, visible, instantaneously recognizable value, and this whole stock market goes crazy, you know that you're going to eat as long as someone's taking currency for something. Maybe not your paper currency that's fiat. I should note that Bill Still taught me that coins are actually sovereign real money. Now, we all know that coins are made of varying things, right? It used to be a quarter was made of pure silver up until 1964. Now they literally stopped printing it with the actual precious metal that it's supposed to represent. Isn't that funny? But I believe a nickel is the most pure currency that we have, because it is pure nickel, as I understand it. Pennies aren't pennies. They're zinc-filled, copper-laminated coins. When you look at any one of the dimes or quarters in America, they're all lined with copper zinc fillers. You know, it's just not what it's supposed to be. So gold and silver is a much better option, right? If you don't physically have it in your hand, you do not have it. You know, you could buy a bunch of water reserves in Texas, but you live in California. When you need water, well, what are you going to do? Erica, just send me some water. We're out of water here. It's been an earthquake. But let's just say that the command comes down, and we're talking probably 5-10 years tops from the moment they announce such a thing, and I don't see this coming anytime soon, but they're prepping for it. And they're trying to install pain on top of currencies, methods of currency. Now, what's funny is kids they very rarely deal with cash. And so the interesting thing that's going on with Gen Yers who work at various retail organizations, when you give them a $20 bill and the bill is $16.23, they can barely make change, even though the cash register is telling them exactly how much to give back. That used to be, you know, you could see the money inside your mind. $3.77 if it's $16.23. You just, boom, you saw it in your brain. When you programmed in high school, one of the first things you have to do is program a cash register to calculate how much value, how much money comes back based on what currency's put in and what the total is. That's like 84, right? I wonder if that's anything other than a college-level class nowadays. Mathematics is damn near an elective at like 8th grade here in America. So they don't have the mathematical ability to quickly calculate change. And even when it's calculated for them, they don't know how to sift out the smallest amount of denominations out of the cash register right away. They have to build up that skill. So I imagine that because I just bought something the other day, and the woman looked at me, and it was $10.60. So I gave her a $10 bill and a dollar. And I said, you could take the 60 cents out of the dollar if you want to just give me... I actually gave her 20. And I said, here's an extra dollar. You can take the 60 cents out of the dollar and give me $10 back. Boy, she just fucking brain went boom. And when she saw it, she was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. That's so much cleaner. Right? Because people don't give her cash. But now that you have the credit card, which is just undisputably a fantastic way to access your credits in the bank. And now they fuck that up with this little chip. Now everybody's just annoyed to have one. I'm annoyed to have one. The retailers now have huge lines behind people that have to use these chip cards, which is overwhelmingly in America, it's over 90% of us use, if you're going to use anything other than real cash, it's plastic. It's not a phone. We're not at phone proliferation yet here. But you watch every day as Android Wallet, or Google Wallet as they call it, and Apple Pay are spreading all over the world. It's announced constantly. Oh, this is a new region of China, a new part of India. Apple Pay, Google Wallet. It's coming, folks. We will be a cashless society, and the only way for you to pay for anything will be with an RFID chip, full identity object called your cell phone. Now, some of you might argue, well, you know, a cell phone's an obligatory object for all human beings now. You have to have one because we have to be able to talk to you, and you have to be able to talk to other people. I mean, how could you be employed without a phone? How could you do this? So everyone's going to have a phone. So it's really not that unfair that you have to have a phone. Well, there are two communities of the world that would disagree with you heavily outside of the principle of sovereignty. And maybe you can blow them off too. One of them is an older community that simply doesn't want a cell phone. They don't have anybody to call. They don't have anyone to call them. They're just in that age bracket. Perhaps their family never really stuck to them and they never really developed any friends. But now they have to buy things. Now, y'all know if you walk into a Verizon store, they make little tiny flip phones for $15 a month, just in case you're broke as a joke. Low RF emissions, radio frequency emissions. So even if you are sensitive to RF frequencies, which is the other group, you could carry around a phone that you could only turn on when you need to use it for something. has barely any minutes on it, et cetera, et cetera, right? But think about the fact that you have to go to a private for-profit organization known as a cell phone provider. You have to purchase a phone. You have to purchase a phone with the capability of having this pay system inside the phone. So a flip phone can't run an application of any size, right? Now, maybe they would re-engineer these things to have a pay system in them. But you got to buy this thing so that you can buy other things. Now, you might rationalize, well, there's a service fee on your bank account. Not everybody has bank accounts. I've always had a bank account, but I know friends that don't. They cash the checks at the place where the check is from. They get their money out, and they live their life on cash. Not that many people, so we can probably write them off, right? But now let's look at, just for 1 second, put a pin in that, and let's go over to national health care in America. National health care in this country is an absolute travesty. The Obamacare system is failing everyone. Their waiting list now to get trivial treatments is growing and growing and growing, second by second. During this phone call, lists just got longer, and the amount of time it takes to get scheduled in there is longer. The premiums have probably gone up since we've had this conversation. Premiums are now 4 to 10 times as much as they used to be with private health care. Oh, but who's making all the money? The private health care industry, which wrote the bill, which was passed by all the shilly senators and House representatives, right? Signed by the president, who's a shill. So they were able to raise rates to astronomical values, including raising the premiums so freaking high, or the copays or whatever. You're out of pocket before the insurance kicks in. They raise it so high that it's of no value to you at all, besides maybe a catastrophic accident where your arm gets knocked off and you have a $1 million bill. But you still have to come up with 10 grand. That'll bankrupt probably more than half the families in the United States of America, because no one's got 10 grand sitting around anywhere. So let's say they can convince you to get rid of cash money, printed cash and coins, with the promise that there'll be this really inexpensive solution for those of you who don't want to get cell phones, yada yada, which isn't going to be a large amount of people. But let's just say that cell phones right now cost, on average, about $200 a phone, and your bill's about $120 a month if you get a full data plan. Okay. But then there's this little flip in reality. Now you have to have a phone to buy something. You have to. It is now the way that the bankers have re-engineered society to need an object that costs something every month. Let me ask you this. And a lot of you have not started your own company. You've not formed a corporation. You haven't read a handbook on the principles of having a corporation as a responsible CEO or board of director. So you're unaware of their principles. The job of a headless snake, which we call a corporation, it still has teeth, it still devours, it still kills, is to make as much money as possible, if possible. That is their objective, especially if it's legal. My God, that's even a double whammy of awesomeness. No one's going to arrest anyone. That $200 phone will go up as high as they can push it. All the discounts will go down or go away. Your amount of your contract lengths could go way up. Maybe you sign a 10-year contract, or maybe you sign a 1-year contract. So they can always roll the deal up. You could never, ever get a good deal that lasts for any length of time. That's the next step. Once cash goes away and your phone is the only thing that can be used to purchase something in the world, the cost of the phone will go up and the premiums will go up, because that is the fiduciary responsibility of anyone who's in charge of the corporation that makes the device we call a phone. And that's just the beginning of this problem. That's a bunch of the rationale of how it's going to be allowed to happen. And that's the first level of the problem. But the second tier of the problem is actually much easier to describe, which is why this episode's almost over. But a lot of you know this already, if you're a truther. But for some of you, this will be new information and a new concept. Hopefully not. Now let's just say that my little second scenario there takes a long time to come to fruition. It won't. it won't take long at all. Look at the healthcare system. It took a matter of seconds before they did the most ridiculous thing on earth. And now the whole country of the United States is strapped with the worst healthcare on planet earth. I mean, the quality of the care sucks. The premiums are through the roof. Your deductible is massive. And everyone's totally fine because they're worried about their life, because money has destroyed their kids, their life, their future, etc. It gets everyone strung out so that relationships fall apart. Either you're arguing over money or someone feels like they need something, so they bought something with the family bank. But now let's just say, let's review. The President of the United States has given over the control of the internet October 1st to the ICANN group, which is now going to be controlled by a European body. The TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is only 40% about trade and 60% about internet censorship. It's going to allow corporations to sue you, as I said in a previous episode. So you use an image you're not supposed to use. You mention that you don't like a company, and it's considered in the courts to be defamation. Which, by the way, will be a lot easier to assert after TPP takes effect. But now let's just say there's a loophole in there somewhere, because we do have freedom of speech, and until they go door to door and take our guns, the Constitution is protected. And for those of you who are familiar with patsies as they relate to false flags, a quick review would be the government creates a situation that's really negative. They do it. They kill people. And they want to blame people that have nothing to do with it, because they obviously aren't going to blame themselves. But now they finger a patsy. Now, usually they kill the patsies, because that way dead men can tell no tales and there's no loose ends. But now imagine it's not quite so intense, but you're a dissenting voice against the government of the United States. And because accusations are all it takes for you to be treated as if you were 100% guilty in the American justice system, all you have to do is be accused, and they'll seize your bank accounts. How many times have you heard that? Financial persons accused, and they seize their bank accounts. They shut off all their money, take all their assets, raid their homes. They haven't been charged with anything. They haven't gone through the due process to prove to the public that these individuals are actually criminalistic. But as a preventional measure, we seize all their bank accounts and do all this stuff, right? And for those who are really, those of the world who are really evil, it does prevent them from exporting their cash and that kind of stuff. But the world's pretty global now. So if you tried to export all your money to Cuba and then fly to Cuba, believe me, Cuba will give you up. They will. You can't run away like you used to. So really don't need this sort of provincial mechanism in place, right? But they simply turn off your access to all of your credits. And your car just happened to be on empty. Your cupboards just happened to be bare. And now you need food and you need gas to travel. Hell, you need food just to get, you need a little bit of currency just to get on a bus. Maybe they pass little laws that say no one can use their credit stick to pay for another adult. Just to make sure that you have to pay for it yourself. So now you're locked down. You got to go to a friend's house. They're going to have to give you food and shelter. But through algorithms, they can find surges in your friends, surges in expenditures, and find out, you seem to be buying for an extra person. Isn't it just you, your wife, and your two daughters? Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Well, why are you buying extra food? So the whole family that supports you is going to have to go hungry to disguise the fact that they're harboring you when you haven't been charged with anything. You've just been accused. So they can prevent and curb dissent through a one world currency and through a cashless society, because they can just shut your ass off. Now, in the late 90s, and I mentioned this once before, but we're right here, and it was a video about a cashless society, about a one world currency. And for some of this won't be a gigantic deal, but for some of you, it will be a major deal. And I think in the name of sovereignty, it should be a big deal for all of us. But someone created a little scenario, and I believe it was the late 90s, where they had created a mock phone call with a pizza place. And a guy calls up to order a pizza. And he has to identify himself because he has to pay for it. And because there's a centralized database about everyone, their medical records come up at the pizza place. And the medical record says you're a diabetic, you're overweight, you haven't gone to the clinic and proven that you've lost your weight. And so this pizza is going to perpetuate your bad health. And because there's a global healthcare system, which everyone has to chip in for, you're costing everyone else a bunch of money with your bad health. So at that point, the scenario goes in two different paths. One, they simply refuse to sell you the food because it's unhealthy. For those of you who are healthy, you're going to go, yeah, that's great. Fatty needs to lose weight anyway. But the second tier of it is you can have that pizza, but it's going to cost four times as much because you're going to be contributing into the healthcare system for your heart attack that's coming, for whatever medical emergency that happens because you're eating poorly. So you're offsetting the healthcare system. Maybe if you have your heart attack too quickly, your premiums just simply go up because you are a high-risk human being to the healthcare system of which everyone is sharing. Now, again, you can rationalize that as a great thing. People need to be more healthy in this world. Imagine a couple that's overweight trying to buy a cake for their wedding, and they can't because they're too overweight to be next to cake. This could go absolutely insane, right? So the real thing I want to leave you guys with is a couple fold. The summary of this is to remember that the Gen Yers are under extreme pressure. They should not be burdened with how the world works in terms of immediate responsibility to control it, but they are being manipulated into emotional voting to cause change, to affect change. Now, we know that when we interview these individuals on the streets, they barely could name all 50 states, let alone place them on a map. But they are controlling, supposedly, where the votes go. So if you don't think voter fraud's about to happen here in 2016, it's all about technology to supplant stress with positivity. What is anyone trying to do with their life? They're trying to become a have of the things that they desire. Well, technology is a short-term have. Look what I have. I've got the new iPhone 7. I've got a Beats headset. Did you see I could scan my fingerprint in my phone? I know you guys feel me. What I want you to spread is the knowledge of why credit cards in America, at least, have been chipped. The reason why it's taking you a minute to cash out at your local store. It's not for security. It's absolutely not for security. Online does not require a chip, and that is where you get hacked. I guess one of the pieces of homework would be to inform a Gen Yer of this formula. And I think it goes twofold. One, they need a little sympathy. They do. They're being attacked on every psychological level you could possibly attack them on. From education that costs too much to educations that are worth no job. They're having their genders confused. On one side, national health care is going to push being healthy. But the only thing that we're actually pushing is obesity. The whole plus size model craze, which I have sympathy for. Some women and some men are just bigger people. They are. But there's a lot of folks that aren't those people, that are 100 pounds overweight, and they're able to say, well, look at the plus model person who's actually built Norwegian big. I'm like her. I'm like him. No, you're not. You're being fed crappy processed sugar, and it's wreaking havoc on the internals of your body, shortening your lifespan, creating anxiety inside your brain because your brain has nothing else to do with that electricity but turn it into thought. And when you're already stressed out like hell, those thoughts are not going to be typically the kind of thoughts you want to have. If you really want to affect change in the world, sovereignty is what we have to preserve, as we always say on this show. Cash is part of the formula. Cash is the rudimentary substrate of gaining any possession in this world, be it a strategic resource like food and water, or something that you've worked really hard for, like a home, a car, a computer, whatever else, a ticket to a concert. We have to kill the TPP. We have to regain control of the internet and within our national borders. We run our internet the way we want to run our internet. Hey, we can pass all kinds of transparency laws to say that, shills are exposed, trolls are exposed. Maybe there is some sort of ID. We have to prove who you are on the internet. I know that sucks, but it usually only sucks for people trying to live in secrecy. That's probably some above board things that should be private, that no one should probably have to reveal themselves. But when you're up on a forum causing people to commit suicide because you're attacking them so much, not us, but those folks that do that, it'd probably be nice to know who the hell they are. When a corporation pays for a bunch of fake movie reviews, we should probably know that they're being paid for by a bunch of corporations that actually stand to benefit from that. I'm going to guess you feel me. I'm going to guess you know what's going on there. This trend of the world to throw out all of the lessons of our elders is really terrifying. And over time, and if you just study history, it is where we have lost control of societies all around the world. You know, I know that the internet has actually been able to expose a lot of the false histories of tyrants, people that actually weren't tyrants who were accused of being tyrants. But some of them were. Some of them were horrible tyrants. Some of them killed the living crap out of their people. And what I find is very interesting is they'll use a smaller tyrant and blow that person up in the eyes of the world to create a smokescreen for the tyrants that were lived at the exact same time that they lived, that slaughtered 10 to 50 times as many people in their own countries, of their own sovereign citizens, under tyranny. So you won't look at them, you know. Pay attention to this guy over here, not these other two dudes. I'll just say this for those of you who know what I'm talking about. Those of you who studied history know that during the, from probably 1930 to 1945, you know, the biggest estimate I've heard is around 70 million people were murdered in that time frame. And none of them were in Europe. Not a single one of them were in Europe when they were murdered. And they were murdered by their own leadership. And it only takes two countries. Two countries are responsible for those 70 million people killed. Now, the numbers could vary a little bit, but Jesus, if it's even half that, which I think it's more close to the original estimate, we don't pay attention to that history. We're focused on a different person, and that's the way the game is played, right? So let's use our wisdom. Let's use the wisdom of our elders. I mean, think about it. The beautiful thing about an elder is that they've done all the hard work. They've actually gone out and tested a theory and either succeeded and we can usurp that successful formula, or they have failed and we can usurp the wisdom to avoid that process so we don't repeat it again, right? If you have the breath to say, well, you know, if we don't study history, we're bound to repeat it. If you have the breath to say that, let me suggest that you reroute that thought towards putting some skin in the game. Find an area of history that is important to you that you understand really well, or research something, and use your breath to spread the truth, revising history back to the way it really happened instead of the romantic histories that make us hate the wrong guys. That's all I'm going to say. If you made it this far, thanks for listening. If you haven't been already, go to deepthoughtsradio.com. From there, you can find the audio, the video, podcast, RSS feed, and what the way the site's being engineered right now is that the latest episode will always be in the front. And so you just load the website and it starts playing inside your web browser if you're on a computer. If you're on a mobile device, then it will link you to your mobile equivalent. To all the new subscribers, welcome. Thank you so much for subscribing. It is an absolute privilege to talk to you guys. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. If you like this, if you like this episode, please give me a thumbs up. And just keep taking care of yourself and someone else. And I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.